66.
Well, see, Kevin Dexter is very clever because he tailored that public service announcement at the end of his newscast for our next guest, David Dusek. So, David, I hope you heard that, and I want you to make sure to take those golf clubs out of the trunk of your car so that you get better mileage and you save the planet, okay? David? David's ignoring me, and he probably should be. David Dusek is our guest from Golf Week magazine. Are you there, David? Okay, I guess we have a problem here. We had David on the line, but he seems to have gone. Maybe he was offended by taking the golf clubs out of the trunk. At any rate, we were going to talk about the PGA just concluded, and, I mean, really, PGA prestige-wise, as I said earlier in the show, is the fourth major. There's no question Masters, U.S. Open, or U.S. Open Masters, one and two, one A, whatever you want to look at it as. And then followed by the Open, the British Open, and then the PGA is the last. But I'd have to say that this year's PGA was, you know, probably the most exciting of the majors this year. David, are you there?
I am here. I heard you the whole time, and I will take my golf clubs out of my car immediately.
Okay. I'm sorry we couldn't hear you. Well,
Here's the thing, and just to jump in on your point. Yeah. The PGA, because it's historically been the last of the four major championships, and the one that is not the Masters that we go back to Augusta National every year, and it's not, you know, the old course at St. Andrews and the crazy weather that we associate with the British Open, and the U.S. Open has this identity of having the hardest golf tournament, you know, every year, and it usually is. The PGA delivers nothing but drama. The PGA delivers nothing but great theater. Every single year, this tournament seems to come through, and it's going to be interesting. Next year, it moves. It's going to be played at Bethpage in May. And, you know, I'm hoping it gets a little more identity with it. This tournament is so underappreciated in my book because every year it seems to deliver, and it sure did again today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just going into today's round with the leaderboard, with the guys who were on at Koepka, who's won two consecutive U.S. Opens, and obviously Tiger and Adam Scott and Rahm and Molinari, who won the British. I mean, and Justin Thomas, you had all these guys clustered at the top, all of them within striking distance. And, you know, for a while, it was anybody's tournament.
It really was. I mean, and that's the thing, is that you were on a golf course that obviously the PGA of America, which runs the PGA Championship, they don't control the weather. You set up where you're going to go many, many years out. And Belle Reve Country Club is not Pebble Beach with the views and this and that. It sets up well. People knew it was probably going to be good scoring. But then when you put that much water, we had tons of rain out here early in the week. You had tons of rain again, you know, during the tournament itself. The conditions were always soft. But the leaderboard that we got was great. The drama coming down the stretch was great. Obviously, it favored big hitters. And if you look up and down the line from Koepka and Tiger and Adam Scott, Rahm really moves it. Thomas Peters, the Belgian, really hits it a lot. Gary Woodland, it was a big hitters golf course, to be sure. But I think that it certainly delivered a leaderboard that showed you that you had to hit good shots. If good shots were rewarded. It got a little bit tricky to putt on some of those greens. They were slower, which tripped up some of the guys, I think, early in the tournament. But it set it up so that if you hit good shots, you could score. And if you didn't, you had to scramble to save par or whatever. And it was really, really entertaining golf, and clearly the best player won.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about long hitters, and I think Dustin Johnson, who finished at minus six, I think, and not really much of a factor, and you know, he just, even when he was close, he just didn't seem in this tournament for some reason.
Yeah, he didn't, you know, and I don't know if that was the fact that he needed to get out to a hot start and to shoot a low score on Thursday and wasn't able to really get ahead and do that, or if it was, you know, just not his day with the putter. He put in a new putter at the end last Sunday at the Bridgestone and putted well with it, but it didn't seem to obviously work for him. And, you know, you're not going to have it every week. And a lot of times we're seeing over the course of the season some real inconsistency from Dustin Johnson. I mean, he won just a couple weeks ago leading up to the Canadian Open, and hasn't really been able to build on that momentum, you know, through Firestone last week, which was won by Justin Thomas. And obviously JT was able to carry over that momentum and played wonderfully this week. But we've had some really erratic play from the world number one. And, you know, we'll sort of see. A lot of people, the big names, are going to take this coming week off. And then they're all going to show up and we'll all be at Ridgewood Country Club in New Jersey for the first round of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And then you got to start bringing your game. And Dustin Johnson will be there. And I suspect that he will be motivated to make up for this performance.
You know, the amazing thing about golf is that one hole can kill you. And I thought that on Saturday, Jordan Spieth was playing well, and all of a sudden he had that triple bogey 7. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much just knocked him right out of the tournament, even though he had a 66 today.
Yeah, he was clearly frustrated. There's no two ways about it. And I think that it's been a really frustrating year all the way around for Jordan. Historically, he's been the best putter or one of the best putters out there, and that's been his weakness. And a lot of times, if you know that your game has a weakness, you can come up with other tactics and strategies to sort of overcome that. And Jordan last year didn't putt great. He putted well, significantly better than he's doing this year. But he's one of the best ball strikers on tour. He led the tour in strokes gained approach to the green, which basically is a measure of your iron play. And he's been very inconsistent with that this year. So there's really nothing that he can hold his game together on. And he holds himself as a three-time major winner. He was trying to complete the career Grand Slam this year. He's never won a PGA, but he's won the other three majors. He expects to contend every week. He holds himself to a high standard. And we in the media, and I think a lot of golf fans, hold him to a high standard. And that's justifiable. And he's not meeting it this year. And I think he's almost ready. He's looking forward, clearly, to Ryder Cup, playing for the U.S. He'll be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. I think he'd like to try and steal one of these playoff wins and do something good there. But I'm pretty sure he'll be looking forward to closing out 2018, getting some rest and getting a fresh start next season.
Yeah, and Ricky Fowler was in contention, and then, you know, he had some physical issues as well and just really wasn't able to put it together with a 71 today.
Yeah, Fowler is another one of those guys who's in the sort of the same boat, except unlike Spieth, hasn't won a major yet. You know, we're waiting for that to happen. I'm convinced it will happen. You know, he's won several tournaments at this point, and he's battling sort of an oblique rib kind of a rib injury. And I think it really affected him yesterday playing a lot of golf. He had to make up and finish up his second round before he started his third round on Saturday because of the weather that we got on Friday. And I think it hurt him, and that could be a sign of fatigue that came in today. He just simply didn't have it, and there were too many guys playing well for you to not bring your A game. You had to go out there and make birdies, and you know it just didn't happen for Ricky. And we'll sort of see what he's able to put together, and we'll see how he plays at Ridgewood.
And of course, the lead that everybody's going to be talking about is Tiger, and I don't think I've ever seen a guy miss so many fairways and hit so many shots out of trouble and score as well as he did and hit so many great recovery shots. I mean, at one point he was 0-for-7 fairways hit and like 3 or 4 under. It was amazing.
There's never, Richard, been anybody who's been better when they're at their worst than Tiger Woods. And what I mean by that is just what you saw today. Can't find the fairway with a map, and yet he has 10 putts. And he's right in it, going in at the turn, you know, at a major championship. And he was able to, you know, in some ways ham and egg it around, use his tremendous iron play, get around, and he shoots 32 on the front nine. And he didn't hit a single fairway. He finally was able to start hitting some drives and getting some things going on the back. Looked great on 12, stuffs it in close and makes birdie on 13 and gets himself to 13 under par. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Game on. I mean, the crowd was going nuts. I can tell you that Koepka and Adam Scott behind him heard every single roar that was going on, and they could feel it. And, you know, they kept playing some good golf, but that bogey on 14, it really hurt him. Came back and bounced back, but he just ran out of holes. I mean, but a 64 from Tiger Woods, he's not going to be playing next week, but he will be at Ridgewood. It's fantastic that we can see him being able to go through an entire PGA Tour season where we really, after the first week or two, could stop answering or asking him questions about the back, about the surgeries, about the health. He's clearly healthy. He's got speed to his swing. And, you know, he's going to be a menace to the European team on the Ryder Cup team. He'll be playing for the U.S., and it's going to be great to see him out there competing like that.
You know, the one thing I've noticed about him, though, is that I see him off balance a lot, and I'm thinking to keep up, and he's still hitting the ball a long way, but to keep up with some of these guys, he's really swinging hard and off balance, and that, I think, is a lot contributing to his inability to hit off the tee and hit fairways.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think that he does feel pressured to keep up with the guys because Tiger is one of the smartest guys out there. He knows that on a wet golf course, like we have this week at Belrive, and like he's had to play at some places, he has to be able to move the ball out there. He's got to be able to hit fairways and hit driver in some cases. And when you're playing alongside somebody like he did today with Gary Woodland, who is one of the elite drivers of the ball out there, and you know that coming up behind you is Brooks Koepka and Adam Scott, and they really move it, he has to be able to hit the appropriate clubs into these greens. The best part of his game is his iron play. He is one of the most elite guys with an iron in his hand, hitting it into greens. And his putting, since he made the putting switch a couple weeks ago, has been significantly better. So he's just got to get himself into a position where he can utilize those weapons in his arsenal. And it's the driver that keeps him away from that. And I think that sometimes he gets frustrated when he starts missing, and there's a lot of technical golf swing stuff that we can get into. But at the end of the day, he's still inconsistent with the driver, but he showed when he drives it well, he can contend with anybody right now on any golf course. And golf is really fun to watch when Tiger's in his game.
Yeah, and his short game is just incredible. I mean, he'll be in spots, and I'll go, well, there's no way he's going to, you know, get up and down on this shot. And he practically holds it. I mean, he's just so good with his short game, with the magic, with the
tremendous confidence.
And
it's just tremendous confidence and experience, and you're getting to that point where, you know, Tiger's 42 years old. He's seen it all at this point. And it's just a matter of him being able to execute the shot that he knows he needs when he needs it. And when he can do that, and you're able to a lot of times practice short game stuff with various injuries. And he was chipping and pitching long before he was able to rip a driver 320 yards off the tee. So that's been a pretty stable part of his game. The putting has come really around the last couple weeks, and that's good. But he's in that place where he knows exactly what he needs to do. It's just getting his body to execute it.
Yeah, and sealing the deal. You know, in the British, he had the lead for a little bit at the turn and couldn't hang on to it. Today he was real close, and that drive on 17 really killed him. I mean, he was just in such a bad spot there that, you know, a hole that could be an eagle or birdie hole and put him right at the top, he couldn't do it. He had to par it.
The one that's going to really haunt him, Richard, when he's, you know, hanging around and the season is done and he's back at home, is the British Open. He had the lead alone on the back nine Sunday. He's playing with Molinari, the guy who eventually wins the tournament. So he knows the tournament was between the two of them at that point, and he had the lead. And, you know, he didn't get it done. Today he shot 64. And yeah, you know what? He had a lip out on the very first hole. Maybe that goes in, and all of a sudden it's 63, and maybe that does a little bit of different stuff into the head of the guys who were leading, who were right behind him, Koepka and Scott, but he didn't. You can't ask for a heck of a lot more than to get a 64 on Sunday, and he just started too far back. I mean, at the end of the day, he had to hit so many good shots, and he needed more help than Brooks Koepka was going to give him. I mean, give credit where it's due. We really haven't talked about him, but he shot, you know, Koepka shoots 66, and it becomes a real big math problem for the rest of the field where you had to go really low, play really aggressively, and if you could hit the shots, you were going to have a chance. But Koepka didn't really back up at the end of the day. Like, he did what he needed to do, and he got the win.
Yeah, and don't forget that Tiger putt that was on the lip and looked like it was just going to drop and just hung there. And I was going, the crowd's going to start stomping and it's going to fall in, but it didn't.
Yeah, it was right there. That was two dimples away from falling into the cup. And, you know, there's all kinds of things. I mean, we're talking about the shots that the Tiger almost made to improve his score. I'm sure if we went back over the course of four rounds, we could find a couple that Koepka maybe didn't get, you know, on Thursday and Friday, breaks here and there. We pay a lot of attention to the stuff, obviously, on Sunday. It's the final round, but they all count, as they like to say. And as much of the storyline, I think, to especially just general sport fans, is going to be Tiger's back and how great he was. And it's a fantastic storyline. Brooks Koepka winning two major championships, you know, this season, basically sealing up the Player of the Year award. It's a tremendous story, and he's a stud of a player. And again, thankfully, he's going to be playing for the U.S. versus the Europeans when we take him on in Paris.
Clearly. And he had a couple of 4 or 5 foot putts on the back that he didn't hit. And, you know, you think, boy, he was 16 under. He could have been 18 under had those come close and fallen. So he could have won by more.
Yeah, he's just got such a good temperament. I mean, whether he is winning or whether he's, you know, missing a couple of putts, he's very even keeled. He really has the perfect demeanor to play in major championship competition. That was the first time, obviously, that he was leading in a major and feeling Tiger Woods pressure coming up on him. And, you know, Adam Scott didn't putt really well today, but he played well until the very end. It was right in there, and he was pushing him around. And you would not have known what the circumstances were had you been looking exclusively at Brooks Koepka. And that is a great attribute to have. I think a lot of times emotion can carry you over the finish line and do great things, but there are a lot of players who can't handle that emotion and let it get the best of them, and it takes away from their ability and talent. And Brooks Koepka is one of those guys that he knows exactly what he's about. He is very comfortable in his own skin. He plays, you know, his game, and if your game on that particular day is better, he'll have a beer with you. It's fine. Great. Congratulations. But you're out there and beat him. And at Belle Reve Country Club, over the course of 4 days, no one was better than Brooks Koepka.
We're out of time, but I got a quick golf media question for you that I hope you can answer. I keep seeing, 63, lowest round in a major, or numbers that are the lowest score ever in a major. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, these are par 70 courses, and back in the day it was a par 72 or maybe par 71. Nobody points that out. They all just look at that number and go, the lowest number. And to me, it's false equivalency. And I don't know why the golf media seems to do it almost universally. Why is that?
I think two things really fast. I think it makes for a really splashy headline, and a lot of times, not to sort of pass the buck, you're going to have editors back at your home office who don't pay attention to that stuff. You know, hey, somebody shot 61, somebody shot 62. There's my headline. I think the guys who are out here week in and week out, we do look at that stuff. You know, is somebody shooting 62 on a par 70 golf course? Are they shooting, you know, all these different numbers? You like to compare apples to apples whenever you possibly can. I just look at it as like someone shoots a really, really low score, and I try and appreciate it for what it is. But I get your point.
Good point, David. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again real soon, maybe at Ridgewood.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Okay, David Dusick from Golf Week magazine.